Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Hi there, and welcome to another midweek guest episode of Oof, Right in the Childhood. Today, I'm joined by Maddie Limerick of Dole Whip and Dreams. Maddie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This is Disneyception. I love it so much.
I am just thrilled that you wanted to come in and talk about the adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, hi, friends, all of the people in the podcast universe. I am Maddie Limerick. I am a freelance costume designer, in general, nerd human. But because we are in COVID times, there's not much costuming and theater happening. But I am also a podcast creator. I have a Disney movie podcast myself called Dole Whip and Dreams over on the Certain Point of View Media Network. Each week, I take a deep dive into Disney movies through all of Disney history. We're not going in kind of any order. And starting January 1st, I actually have a new show coming out called Saturday Morning Confidential. It's a similar structure, but it covers all ideas of nostalgia that artists and creators find nostalgia with.
Well, that's super, super fun. And it is my understanding that you're also talking about Ichabod and Mr. Toad this week. Is that right?
We are. Yeah, I had a, you know, technology. It's my first year. And so technology has been a little bumpy for us. And I thought I had completely lost this episode with a good friend of mine. And I was cleaning out 3 years of grad school files on my my computer. And lo and behold, it had gotten shoved in a folder when it auto-downloaded. So it's a little clipped episode. I normally do about 90-minute episodes. It's about 40 minutes. Where I talk about this with a native of the Hudson Valley who grew up loving the tale of Sleepy Hollow and kind of having it entrenched in him. So, yeah, we're talking about it on my show. It'll be released this Friday. So it'll, yeah, it should be actually out by the time this airs. So I'm excited for you all to listen to that as well. But I oddly love talking about this weird little movie that they put together of these two great shorts, which was super common of the time. So I was excited to come on and talk about it.
Well, like I said, I'm just super excited to have you too. So before we start diving into your impressions of the movie and how it feels to watch it, I'm going to ask you the most important question of this entire film.
Yes.
And that is, who is the most fabulous character in all of English literature?
Oh my god. Oh my god. In all of English lit, oh my god. You've just totally stumped me. Because there are lots of stories from different eras. Like, I think Mrs. Bennet from Pride and Prejudice is fabulous in the worst kind of way. And I love the White Witch from Chronicles of Narnia. And oh god, there's just so many. You've officially stopped me.
I probably should have warned you. That's the line at the very beginning of this movie is, who's the most fabulous character in all of English literature? And when I watched it, I was like, so please tell me who it is, because I'm not sure it's Mr. Toad.
Well, I'm not sure I'd say it's Mr. Toad, but for the sake of this episode, why, it's Mr. Toad.
It's Mr. Toad.
I feel like this was just that Drag Race moment where RuPaul was looking at Miss Fame all episode and going, how's your head? And Fame could not answer it. And I feel like you just threw me the biggest bone and I couldn't. So it's Mr. Toad.
It's Mr. Toad. No, but I do like that. Is it Ichabod Crane or Mr. Toad? And if so, who are you that you think this? Right. But I thought that was the most hilarious way to start this movie.
Of course. Well, I mean, it's very mid-century American of them too, because this idea that like the most American entertainment company was being like, look at this British thing, look at all these British stories we're telling, look at all these specifically non-American stories we're doing.
I'm assuming you know that this began as a full-length feature and ended up getting cut down to what it was.
Yes, absolutely.
So when do you remember watching it for the first time?
So I remember I have I'm ingrained with memories of the Ichabod section of the Sleepy Hollow. I remember, so we didn't have cable growing up, but this time of year, specifically in October, Disney Channel would always offer like a free weekend where you could like watch, and they would really pack in, like they would always show that 60 minute version of Alice in Wonderland, 101 Dalmatians would show. You get some of the like TV programming, but I remember in October that they would always show the Sleepy Hollow portion. And so for me, it was so ingrained that I remembered it. And I don't actually think until my watch of this a year ago that I ever watched the Wind in the Willows, the Mr. Toad section. I knew it was a ride at Disneyland that we'd had at Disney World that everybody was very upset when it closed. But I think a year ago was the first time that I watched The Wind in the Willows, but I remember I'm a big weenie when it comes to horror and spooky things. And so the headless horseman coming through the woods and throwing his head at Ichabod as he runs through the countryside is so, I have the worst guttural memories of that, of being so afraid of that. And that I didn't even remember until rewatch. And then I watched this again the other day that like, it's all musical. I had totally forgotten about that as well. Again, until I watched it about a year ago. And so I think as a kid, I remember watching and just being so afraid of the Headless Horseman that I kind of forgot everything else in that weird nostalgia brain.
You know, I actually kind of had the same experience. I absolutely remember watching The Legend of Sleepy Hollow every Halloween when Disney Channel was on free preview. And my two big takeaways were how much Ichabod could eat and that pumpkin throwing scene. It was those two things.
Because he's so skinny and yet packs away. Well, and that was something I, again, watching it as an adult, I went, whoa, I'm finding myself totally not rooting for him at all. And I'm sure we'll get into this, but like, it's one of those things I went, tale of the unlikable protagonists.
So I refer to Brahm as Proto Gaston.
I do as well.
And Ichabod's a creep.
A total creep, an absolute creep.
Like, he's like, I'm going to marry her so I can have her daddy's land. And I'm like, wait, what?
It's one of those that he almost reminds you of, like, the Ali Hakim from Oklahoma, the, like, snake oil salesman that's traveling around, except he's the school teacher that goes town to town until he can find the most beautiful woman to, like, marry into her rich family and have those things. And when he can't find it, he just moves on to the next town. Like, it's, like, that's not part of the story, but in my, you know, my adult brain goes, who is this spaghetti man coming in that's like, I look weird, but I'm going to marry the super pretty girl with the rich family.
Right. And I like how Katrina's just like, whatever, this is fine.
Yeah.
In my first watch, I thought that she didn't notice. But in my second watch, I think that she did. And she was just like, well, these are nice gifts. That seems fine.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I go, oh, yeah, girl, take those gifts. You don't owe him anything. If he wants to give you a present, you take that present. You appreciate that present. You owe him nothing. So take those presents. Do what you're going to do.
You know, she's also kind of conniving, too, because for that final dance, she writes both of them and personally invites them to that party. And so they're both vying for attention. And I'm like, Katrina, everyone kind of sucks in this story.
Yes. And I ultimately like to think that she and Brahm are both in on the headless horseman aspect of scaring him out of town. I like to think that, I mean, granted, because much like many of the movies during this time, Katrina has the least agency of anyone because she is the woman, which is, she's a plot point. She's property to be won. But I like to think that she was like, let's give him a razz. I'm smarter than he thinks I am. In this situation, and I like to think she was in on it with Brahm.
That's a great way to think about it. I kind of love that. So I have a Mandela effect going on with that particular scene. So I have two memories of that ending, and one of them is the pumpkin, and it misses, and it's Brahm like throwing these pumpkins, and then Ichabod and Katrina get married, and then I have the one where Ichabod maybe dies. They're very unclear about that.
Oh, I don't.
He might have died. He might have moved to another town. Mm-hmm. We're not sure.
It's very unspecific. The wiki uses the phrase that Ichabod has spirited away by the headless horseman. Which, from someone that I lived in the Hudson Valley for 4 years, I go, that sounds about right. That sounds like those Catskill people, like, that sounds just about right. Also kind of remembering that this was also a Washington Irving story, along with Rip Van Winkle, and those kinds of almost magical realism, like, there's just enough that you're like, maybe we do have fey and magical things in this world, or maybe we don't. It's none of our business. Let's keep moving on.
Not pay attention to them. I talk a little bit about that, about how Irving was actually stationed at Sleepy Hollow during the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. And during his time, they found a Hessian soldier beheaded near a bridge. And then later in his life, he met someone named Ichabod Crane. So, I mean, it's really unclear where he got his ideas, but...
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, that's also that time where... we know stories that are supposed to be true that might, they're as fictionalized as any other, literature of the time, of those, George Washington chopping the cherry tree, and Johnny Appleseed, and Pecos Bill, and Paul Bunyan, and there are those things that there is so little separating the fictionalized version of American history from the fictionalized story from the same time. So who's to say who were real people and what actually happened?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I think he's also taken a little bit from the Wild Hunt from German folklore there. Because they don't have heads either.
Absolutely. I would agree. Well, and that's just, I had a professor who liked to say that there have been 5 original ideas. And they just get rehashed over time. And every time you look at something, well, that's just not original. And I go, yeah, we've had 1,000 different versions of the story. We, very little is actually original or real anymore. So it's, but it's, a good artist borrows, a great artist steals. So, right. it's not surprising, but also how dynamic and fun is that of this idea of a headless man that's riding through the super creepy unlit woods of the beautiful Hudson Valley.
Only on Halloween night, though.
Only on Halloween night. I mean, but, because not far from there is also, Salem's only about 4 hours. So, that area is just full. It's where the original settlers were. It's where a lot of the larger communities, the Huguenots were in New Paltz, which is right literally, like, I think 30 minutes north. That's where I lived. And the Huguenots, literally, their buildings are still there. And it's one of those where it's like, yeah, ghost maybe. And then you walk into those buildings and you're like, oh, this haunted. So, there's a lot of just the oldest parts of our country. I totally believe, there's something that goes bump in the night. And, people have seen weird things for 300 years. So who's to say?
Yeah, I grew up in the quote unquote new part of the country, west of the Mississippi. So I've never been to the truly haunted areas, I guess.
Oh, I would say a lot of the West is very haunted as well.
I'm sure it is. There's a lot more violence.
Oh, a lot more violence and a lot of just stories that, again, it's that idea that, like, history is written by the victors, which happens to be lots of white settlers, which did really awful things in order to take the land that they had. So, which, again, bringing up Oklahoma again, I always go, is that really what happened? Or was it much more violent and scary than that? I'm going to go with violent and scary.
Violent and scary. Yeah.
Well, and it's so interesting to me, again, that they chose to tell the story of Sleepy Hollow with one narrative voice. Now, while we get lots of voices in the story, it's just Bing Crosby. And he's just singing and crooning along. Which, you know, from a historical standpoint of the time that this was made in, that makes sense. He was huge in film. He was huge in music. He was top 40 star. He was a theater star. So, you know, it's one of those things that made sense. And looking back now, I go, Bing Crosby's the White Christmas dude. That's really weird. But again, it was so popular, it would have been easy to sell. But it's so interesting that really Legend of Sleepy Hollow is like 19 minutes, maybe. It's really short. The Wind in the Willow. And this actually only tells like three chapters of Wind in the Willow, maybe. It's a really short chunk of Wind in the Willow. It's still, you know, about 38 or 40 minutes of this. And so, you know, we're barely cobbling together an hour of film, which, again, it's this period of Disney film. But I do think it's interesting that they found a way to tell kind of a clear and succinct story, or as much of the story as we needed, in that kind of 20 minutes through a single narrative voice. But the animation was so dynamic, and the characters, even despite being a little two-dimensional, they're super flat in some ways. It's still a really interesting story. And it's a fun story.
It really is.
But I do think making it kind of a musical narrative with no other dialogue is a really interesting way to tell this story.
It is. And I kind of was like, oh, Ichabod's song is way better than Toad's song. And it was about halfway through, I went, no one talks here except for Bing Crosby. I didn't realize that. And it is. He's the White Christmas dude. But he was so popular. Like, if nothing else, the 40s bits have star power. That's star what they've got. Power. Like, in Melody Time, you've got the Andrews sisters, and you've got Carmen Miranda's little sister in the Three Caballeros. They've got stars in them. I guess if they couldn't do anything else, they were just going to throw famous people inside them.
Well, and this was the time of the studio system, and so I think it was probably easier for them to get people or, like, convince people to come in, or Snow White had been so big that, like, it really did kind of kick them off. So I'm not totally shocked that they were able to get someone like Bing Crosby. I think just looking, and again, it's hard to look at it without future brain of looking at the next, you know, 75 years of film and pop culture that would come after. I know, you know, it's the same as having Ariana Grande do the new version of Beauty and the Beast on, you know, it's that same kind of thing. She has the staying power, or Gaga being in Star is Born. It's just one of those things. It's every time Star is Born is remade, it's, you know, it's Judy, it's Barbara, it's Gaga. You know, it's one of those things that it makes sense that if we were to make this now in the exact same way, it would be one of those Disney names or Disney voices that we are accustomed to because of Disney.
I want to take a moment to thank my supporters on Patreon. Jason and Mixie have both joined in at the $5 level so they can hear ad-free versions of every episode one day early and listen to my discussion of the propaganda that Disney created during World War II. Supporters on Patreon help me cover hosting fees and upgrade my equipment while being able to choose to promote small businesses. If you'd like to become a patron, you can search the show over at Patreon, or you can follow the link in the show notes or on my website.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, during the wartime, especially because Disney had been kind of fell out of favor during the whole Fantasia fiasco, but then they got, you know, pumped right back up with all their propaganda that they put out. And the U.S. Army advertised for them as much as they advertised for the U.S. Army. So I'm sure it was very easy to get all of the members of the USO tour to just like wander into the Disney studios to do a recording real quick and then wander right back out.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100% with that. Absolutely. But I think I think it is strange that these two stories are paired together. While they are both whimsical and interesting, they don't there's really nothing that connects them, like, at all. And that's why I always, other than people actually are really, really fond of both of these stories, I'm not sure ultimately, just looking at, like, laying out all the properties from seeing all of this era of film and kind of how they were doing the movies, I'm not sure why these two were put together. Because they do, you know, one, we've got one that's in England and one that's definitely not in England. Definitely not in England, but, you know, it could really sit anywhere. It doesn't have to be Sleepy Hollow, New York, but the two have two very different feelings. They're from two very different, you know, 1908 and 1790 are very different. So, you know, it's just, it's really interesting that these were the two that were paired together.
You know, interesting too. I think it might have been they knew that this was the last compilation film, the last package film. And my episode's that has already played is going to go a little bit more into why they knew that. But I think it was just, well, we've got these two and we want to release one more to get all of our debts paid off so we can do Cinderella. And these two are pretty good. We'll just glue them together and put some narration in the middle.
Well, I think. I say that and then I go, well, they decided to use the library as the framing device. And so ultimately these are two stories that come from literature. So I guess from that aspect, it's let's pull two books off the wall and throw them together. So, you know, that is, it does work, I guess, in that aspect of it.
It's a better connection than the fun and fancy free Jack and the Beanstalk versus Bongo the Bear.
I have no idea how that worked. You know what? I also feel like they weren't thinking about it too much during that time. I think this era, one, a lot of the Disney fans forget, because I think a lot of Disney fans out there now, especially that are in like our age group, think of Disney and they think of like a hand, like five of the pre-Renaissance films, and then their Disney films are Renaissance forward, where, you know, there are a lot of these that if you're just a casual Disney fan, you're not really thinking about this era of film. And they always, you know, Disney is so magical and everything is so, you know, important and how they tied everything together. But I was like, you know, at points they were just trying to stay afloat and just putting movies out to put movies out because they needed money. So, you know, it's not always a grand artistic reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I think we do. We think about, we go from like, I actually, until I started this podcast, I didn't realize that Cinderella wasn't right after Bambi. And when I looked at it, I was like, what are these? Why are these five? And then I started kind of looking at them like, oh, well, I've seen parts of all of these. I've never seen all of any of these. But like, I mean, even in living in the US, I've seen Song of the South on Disney Channel when it was on free preview. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen. But looking at the others, I was like, well, I've never seen any of these. What are these? And then I started watching and went, oh, Mickey and the Beanstalk. Of course I've seen that. Oh, Sleepy Hollow. Of course I've seen that. But I don't think I'd ever seen all of any of them. And I think it gave that license to Disney Channel later on when we were kind of like in the silver era and the bronze era before the Renaissance to like, oh, well, we're just going to throw some old cartoons on the TV. That'll be fine. And just make everyone believe that Alice in Wonderland was all that there ever was.
Right. Well, and it also, you know, because that's back when Disney fought home media for so long, like they even took Sony to court to stop them from making Betamax and VHS. And then they went, well, if we can't beat them, I guess we join them. And then some of these films were the ones that they like split up, and some of the Mickey Mouse shorts that they split up. And then they were the first things released on VHS. Some of these like really short stories. And so it's not shocking that these were the ones that they, I guess when these were all in the vault, these meant nothing to them. So they went, okay, you know, we're not putting Snow White or 101 Dalmatians out on VHS because they're the untouchables. So let's do these. We have these. Let's use them.
The benefit of them fighting home media for so long is that I actually have memories of seeing Snow White and Bambi and I think I saw Pinocchio all three in theaters with my grandparents at one point, like before they opened the vault or whatever. And like, I loved having that because I kept thinking when I was older, when I was about 12, 13, I kept going, it doesn't make any sense that, that Snow White's from 1938. I saw that in theaters. And it wasn't until I was older that I understood that they just kept re-releasing them into theater.
Yeah, and I thought I totally made up a memory of seeing Snow White right after my sister was, when my sister was like two or three, and it would have been right before the first VHS release of Snow White in the mid-90s. I was like, there's no way we saw that in theaters because it would have been after Beauty and the Beast came out. And I went, huh, that's not possible. And then I went, oh, it is possible because of the re-releases, which again, it's the weird things that you find out once you start researching for a podcast. When I thought I had a really good, like, specific Disney knowledge, and I went, wow, there's so much that are, it's in my brain, and I thought I made these things up, but then, oh no, wait, here they are. I didn't actually make these up. Yeah, there's a lot of it in Disney. I find it specifically with Disney and nothing else. There are a few other, like, those weird Japanese anime properties that were kind of getting American dubs. I think it's funny, there's like that collective repressed memory of Nemo and Sleepland that a lot of people have. And like, I remember watching it because we had a VHS from the 90s release. But I think there's this era, especially people in our kind of age group and demographic, of they're like, no, 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 I saw these Disney movies in theater. And everybody's like, that's not possible. But it's because most people don't have an intrinsic enough knowledge to know that, you know, I just did a Snow White episode. And when I, you know, they had like 14 re-releases, which is why Snow White has made almost as much as, you know, one of the Frozen films over time, because it has been re-released so many times.
I saw recently that it's in the top 10 of the highest grossing movies of all time. Like, because of if you account for inflation, it's like just under Titanic or something.
Yes. I mean, but also it was because they waited so long to do a VHS release. And then it was another 14 years after that before it got a DVD release that, like, you know, it sold like 5 million VHS copies in the first 3 or 4 months it was out. Like, they, and that's back when VHS was still like $30. That was when you were getting one new Disney movie a year. They were dropping them out of the vault. And, you know, a lot of the live action were coming out. But like, people were spending money on their home libraries. So, you know, they've, every time, you know, Snow White's one of those things that she is still so popular. And, you know, it's, you know, some of these even that I, you know, again, we talk about that I don't really have memories of both, but I remember that Ichabod and Mr. Toad cover, that poster that comes up if you Google it, which was the home video release for it. I remember that, like, you know, because everybody remembers looking over the shelves at your local VHS store when you know, a Walmart or Target opened in your town. But, you know, it's that's why, and, you know, it's good that they do account for inflation now, because, you know, the money they made in, you know, 1939 is not the same as the money they made, you know, 10 years ago.
Right. And so that was something.
Also, a lot of those movies that have been studied over time, there's just, I find that some of these, there's so much information on or so little information on. Like, it's, there's really nothing in between. Especially when you get near the end of Walt's life, when people were like actually documenting with video in the studios, like, you know, when they were starting to hit like the Waking Sleeping Beauty era of animators and things, there's just, there's either a ton of information or there's no information. And I find on some of the episodes that the further I dug, the further I went, oh, I need like a string map to tell this. I was like, this is too much for just our basic overview that I do in my episodes. But yeah, it's amazing the things that I still feel that I've missed every time I cover something.
Really interesting, because it was during the research for this movie that I realized that the reason that they made all these package films was because the studio was so deep in debt that the bank wouldn't allow them to finance any more feature films until they paid off all their debts. And so that's why they kept releasing these package films until they had paid off enough of their debt for them to release a new feature film. In fact, the Bank of America said you can only release these feature films and then no more until you've paid it all back. And I was like, that feels like something that should have been mentioned way earlier in my research, but I found it out at the end of the package film era. And it's just, okay, that was out of order, but fine.
That's, well, I mean, because, you know, this is that time where they almost lost everything.
Oh,
people,
yeah.
People tend to only remember, again, you know, it's not people like us that have an unhealthy knowledge of all things Disney. Not really unhealthy. I think I like to think a historian's level of all things Disney. But, you know, it's one of those that it's people forget that he wasn't the best businessman. Because he followed his heart so much, which, you know, it's kind of cool. But that's why Roy was there going, Walt, we can't do this anymore. And people finally were like, no, Walt, you got to stop, man. And so, you know, there were times they almost lost everything over and over again. And it's a wonder, despite everything, that the company still exists.
It really is.
Now we say this, and this is literally, we're recording this in the days after thousands of people have been laid off from, well, tens of thousands of people were laid off from Disney. So, maybe we're hitting that point again. But
I feel really bad about that. But I feel like for the first time, it might not be Disney's fault that thousands of people are being laid off from them. Like, I'm not going to say it's great. And they tried to keep them on a lot longer than a lot of other multi-million dollar companies did. I'm going to, like... It was so sad to see. I was like, oh, this is so sad. But I kind of was like, but they kept them on for this long without worrying about it.
That could be a whole multi-part story, too, of just there is so much. I think people just forget that there are so many times that we were so close to losing Disney for good. And I hate to think about like what entertainment would be if they did lose them because, you know, through all of their faults. They have oftentimes defined what the rest of the industry was doing and everybody else started copying them. So, you know, they've been a trendsetter for so long. So it would have been interesting to think about, well, what happened? What would have happened if they had have had to stop producing at those times?
Right. And I mean, I'm glad that they got to keep going and they got through the package film era and back into princesses. And so, yeah, next week I get to start with talking about Cinderella.
Which is so beautiful. It's one of my favorite ones to revisit. I don't love a lot of that age of films, but Cinderella is, it's so beautiful. And it's got my it's got Jacques and Gus Gus, who are two of my favorite little plush companions, if you will. So I can't wait to hear that episode. I'm excited. For everyone out there, I am a huge listener of this show. And I'm so excited that you all are listening to us now.
Well, I I'm super happy that you were here. And why don't you take a moment to tell everyone how they can find your podcast and how they can get in touch with you if they want to listen to everything you have to say about Disney as well.
Great. Well, thank you. So you can find us all over the internet. I'm part of the Certain Point of View family of shows. We have some incredible stuff from movies to Star Wars to books. Over there, we just acquired several new shows, and we've even got one. I have a Golden Girls show that's coming out soon about how the Golden Girls changed how we watch television. So we've got some interesting things emerging over the next year, so you can find us at certainpov.com. And then once on our homepage, you can see all of our shows, and I'm Dole Whip and Dreams on there. And then so on Facebook, we're Dole Whip and Dreams Podcast. On Instagram, we're Dole Whip and Dreams Pod. Twitter, we are Dole Whip Pod, because of course I have an entirely long, long podcast title, which makes branding difficult.
That deeply in my soul.
I do have another side podcast that I started during quarantine. It's called Isolation Cast Voices from Quarantine. And starting in November, I'm doing my first foray into audio, I don't want to say audio drama, but like fiction. So instead of drawing as a designer for Inktober, I've been writing on paper with pens because I am what I call a stationery hoe. I like to buy lots of stationery things and never use them. So I'm delving into that. So for the month of November, Monday through Friday, there will be a short form story every day, about 2 to 5 minutes to listen to. And then starting January 1st, I will have Saturday Morning Confidential, along with a mini series about the first 9 years of the Power Rangers. because the head of our network and I love Power Rangers. And I've gotten some of the Power Rangers actually on the show with me that we've been recording interviews. So make sure you don't check us out on our Instagram and Facebook. We have a link tree to everything. So I know that I've just given you a lot. So if you find us on CircuitPOV.com or Joel Can Dreams Podcast on Facebook or Instagram, there's a link tree and you can find this episode. You can find us everywhere. And then all of my personal stuff is tied to that as well. So find us there.
Excellent. And I do want to thank you again for taking the time. And
if this one isn't available yet,
yeah, this was such a great talk, and you can feel free to come back anytime and talk about any other movie you love.
Let Music Be.
I would love
to. For more information on that studio, you can visit their website at letmusic.be or visit my website for an easy link. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you come back each week to discuss Disney through modern eyes. And while you're at it, if you're enjoying yourself, please let your friends know about me. I'd also appreciate a rating and review wherever you're listening to the show. This podcast was recorded with the help of the Craig Chatbot and edited by me. I release a new regular episode every Monday through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many, many other podcatchers. So until next time, keep the magic alive.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.